the week that pertains to the past political assassinations or the news that pertains to the conspiracies formed in our government by persons in the White House by upon direction from persons outside of the White House, and how these conspiracies affect our lives. I try to explain some of the newspaper articles that are coming through or information that's coming through each week that is linked mostly to the past political murders of President Kennedy in Dallas, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, the succession of political assassinations, and I'm doing the outline of a book now about 300 domestic assassinations that are related to these, all the conspiracies, they're all related to each other. In the process of the conspiracies, a lot of people wonder how come a person hasn't spoken up yet or told the truth about what happened. If it was so complicated, certainly people will begin to reveal some of the secrets. Well, there's a lot of methods of keeping people silent, murdering them, threatening them. There are various means of keeping silence, but most of the people that participate in these conspiracies have a religious, political dedication that they're doing this out of patriotism, and that to not kill particular people would be to give the world away to the communists. So they rationalize what they're doing, and they're not going to tell on each other. But in the news this last week, there was a group of people who began to talk about the Watergate and give conflicting stories to what came out at the trial. The Watergate was the arrest of 7 men. The trial was just over. They were caught at the Watergate Hotel in the Democratic headquarters June 17th this last year. Only 7 men were charged at the trial. There are many, many more people involved. It was a complete whitewash, and now it's been turned over to a congressional committee, and I'll talk about that future whitewash. But there are people now, this last week, who began to talk and challenge the testimony of the men that were at the trial and their motives for going in. And this is terribly important to my research, because doing 9 years of research on political assassinations, I maintain that there was a coup d'etat in Dallas, that the government was overthrown, and that this extremely right-wing group has been working ever since Dallas, gathering control and tightening up the control of the government to an eventual police state. And this last week, a former persons from the FBI, a Mr. Odie Fish from the National Committee, the Republican National Committee, spoke up, police chief in San Diego, the police chief in Miami Beach, and we have conflicting stories now about this particular espionage squad that was arrested at the Watergate Hotel. Now, almost every week since October 71, I've mentioned the name of Lewis Tackwood, and the references that these people make go back to the original Tackwood allegations, and this is why it's so important to point them out. Now, Tackwood worked for 9 years for the L.A. Police Department as an agent provocateur, and he said that an espionage squad from back east, from Washington, involving the Justice Department, the White House, with branches in every state, was formed and began operating in September of 1971 for the coming elections. And the purpose was to hire provocateurs and cause riots at the convention, which at the time that he served, the convention was still going to be in San Diego. And there would be massive killings and violence, which would bring on martial law. And then Tackwood said that the plans were to kill Richard Nixon, too, and make Spiro Agnew the president. Well, this last week, after the trial was over, the men didn't speak up before the trial, but this last week, the persons that I mentioned, and I'll go into what they have revealed, back up the Tackwood allegations completely, because the defense at the trial of the 7 men at the Watergate, 5 pleaded guilty, and then 2 went through with the trial. Their defense was that the Democratic Party had radicals, extremists, that were going to provoke riots at the time of the conventions, and that they could possibly harm Richard Nixon. My contention was all the time that these men could be planting evidence at the Watergate Hotel at the Democratic headquarters, go ahead with their plans to hire provocateurs, and if anything happened to Nixon, it would look like friends at McGovern's or the Democrats did the actual killing of Richard Nixon. So their defense was, we had to fund this $250,000 for spy money to find out if Richard Nixon was going to be killed and how far the demonstrations would go. Well, James McCord was arrested at the Watergate Hotel, and because he was chief of security for Richard Nixon's life in Miami, that would sound maybe he was justified to find out how many people would be down there rioting, except that in their defense, and the prosecution didn't bring this up at all, they were arrested with the men who were hiring provocateurs for the very conventions that he was going to be protecting. But this week, there was a challenge to this particular defense that the Watergate men used, and this is the peekaboo of the Civil War that I describe on many of the radio shows. If you've ever listened before, I said that there is the conservative Republican Party, and then there is the extreme right-wing fanatical group. You could take, it would be similar to the king and queen of Greece and the generals and the ruling class. And then there was the military junta that cooked them all out, that wanted a total police state and no elections, no conservative or middle-of-the-road government at all, but the arch-conservatives were kicked out at the same time. The Republican National Committee has been the representative of the Republican Party across the board for the 50 states. And the committee to re-elect the president, headed by John Mitchell, who was never active in Republican parties and didn't know Richard Nixon until 1967 when he moved into his office, the committee to re-elect Richard Nixon seems to be the Squad 19 that Tackwood was talking about. This particular little clique of men were the ones that Tackwood was referring to that wanted to overthrow the government. And the Republican National Committee, the chief of security, his name is Odie Fish, and he's chief of security for the Republican National Committee, which is different than the committee to re-elect Richard Nixon. He made a statement this week in the Washington Post that the story that they needed $250,000 to monitor potential anti-war violence was not true at all. They didn't need that at all. He said that he was chief of security for the Republican committee and that this monitoring was not necessary. He said it was overpriced, it was unnecessary, it was inaccurate information. Now, we know that at the time of the trial, they said that $250,000 was used maybe for the Watergate affair, the bugging equipment and paying the men and their hotel reservations and the dinner and renting the car and the listening post of the Howard Johnson. But there also was the question of $10 to $20 million secret funds that were never revealed because they were collected before April the 7th. Now, he says the monitoring of this particular office was not necessary at all. The testimony of Jeb Magruder, who worked for Richard Nixon in the White House and then went on to work for the committee to re-elect the president as the deputy campaign director, he said, this is a direct quote of chief of security for the Republican National Committee, said, Mr. Magruder's testimony before that trial was untrue. He said the threat of 250,000 anti-war demonstrators coming to San Diego, he testified, was the reason for moving the convention from San Diego to Miami. And the chief of security for the Republican committee said there wasn't any truth to that at all. Well, we know that the reason they quickly moved it was because the buildings weren't complete that the Sheraton Hotel and ITT owned, where the conventions were going to be in San Diego, when the scandal came out about offering $400,000 to settle a case in the Justice Department for the re-election of Richard Nixon that ITT was going to give, they moved the convention to Miami. It had nothing to do with the radicals. So Jeb Magruder got on the stand and lied, and we all know it was a lie. He wanted to justify their team having these hundreds of thousands of dollars and breaking the Democratic Party. So he said it was because they were going to have 250,000 in San Diego. This has been challenged. Magruder's testimony, Mr. Fish says, that they didn't need all this intelligence gathering. He claims that Magruder justified the intelligence gathering because of the massive amount of radicals that were going to be there. And Mr. Fish has said that this was unrealistic, and there was not one drop of information about the radicals that the National Committee didn't have, or the FBI, or the Secret Service, that all along, anything they needed to know, they had. And there was no need for this spy group working on their own. He's implying that they were not part of the Republican National Committee. They went on to say that the FBI and the Secret Service, members of the FBI and Secret Service, never recommended a site change for the security problems. There was no security problem for the conventions at all. Now, the San Diego assistant police chief came in this week. His name is Jim Canone, and he would be in charge of security in San Diego. And he heads the local law enforcement, and he said no one in his department ever predicted 100,000 demonstrators or any intelligence until March, when they decided to move. He said they didn't expect more than 20,000. Now, the important thing about all of this is that the chief of police, the head of the Republican committee, are challenging the motive of this other branch, this espionage squad, to do what they did. The police chief said that he had formal liaison with the Republican committee and the security officials, and no one in San Diego had contact with G. Gordon Liddy and the reelection committee. Now, this is important because the Miami police and the San Diego police had no contact with these men who said they were in charge of security for the life of President Nixon at the time of the convention, that they were doing this to save his life. The Miami Beach police official this week said he knew of no re-election committee. Now, this was an elite espionage squad that has nothing to do with saving the life of Richard Nixon. And we're going into another news item that pertains to those TACWA allegations. In other words, the chief of police in Miami, the chief of police in San Diego, did not even work with this group. And yet this group was making hotel reservations. They were bringing in demonstrators in favor of the bombing, the mining the harbor in Haiphong, and the escalation of bombing. They were bringing in many, many people, paid provocateurs, into Miami, but they weren't making it secure. The security had nothing to do with this particular espionage team. This team was to cause the riots, not to make the city secure. A high official in the FBI this week also said, and the Secret Service, that they had liaison with the Republican National Committee and not with the re-election committee. So this re-election committee to re-elect the president, which consisted of 19 major persons, and Louis Tackwood referred to a squad 19, which I thought was 19 people in the Los Angeles Police Department, but added up to 19 persons from the White House that worked with the White House of the committee to reelect Richard Nixon, was a small clique of people representing the interests of Mr. Rockefeller, John Conley, the Pappas Foundation that overthrew Greece, the CIA Foundation, and the Ashbrook Agnew people. It was the committee to reelect the president was a far right-wing paramilitary group that did not meet with the security people from the Republican Party. Another article said the reelection committee intelligence apparatus, if they had one, didn't need to duplicate because the FBI and the Secret Service could do all they needed to do. They didn't need to duplicate the work. Well, if the FBI and the Justice Department and the Secret Service can decide that Richard Nixon is secure, that there aren't that many protesters, there's not 250,000, there's only 20,000 or 10,000, then what was James McCord? He's with the CIA 19 years, Howard Hunt 21 years, Bernard Barker, Frank Sturgis, Mr. Martinez, Gonzalez, the same team that worked at the Bay of Pigs with Richard Nixon at the time of Bay of Pigs. What were they doing, carrying passes, taking passes from the Democratic office that could cause riots in Miami, getting the air conditioning plant, the location of pictures behind desks, the floor plans, duplicate keys to the doors? They had passports on their persons with aliases. walkie-talkies, communications. This tight-knit group was not lined into the intelligence that would have been either in San Diego or in Miami. The law enforcement organizations that were involved in taking care of the conventions said that there was no security problem at any time, that there was no necessity for this network operating at all. All in law enforcement officials that were interviewed said it would have been impossible as early as 1971 or in the fall of 72 when these men began to work together to make any estimate of demonstrations in San Diego or Miami even. But when they began to work, the conventions would be in San Diego. In Miami Beach, a particular gentleman said that only 3,000 or 5,000 people even showed up at the time of the conventions. But his name was Ted Howard, but he justified the committee to re-elect the president by saying that his mail that he received in telling him that there was going to be demonstrations was about 250,000 letters. He received 250,000 letters about protests that were going to take place in Miami. And I think the way agents and informers are placed into every office and provocateurs into every office in this country and every political office, any single group that would get information about 250,000 protesters against Richard Nixon in Miami would be known to the Secret Service. This doesn't have to be secret information with one little espionage group. Now, the important thing is that Mr. Magruder, who worked with this team, who was in the White House, who planned the inaugural events in Washington, and he's very high up in the Nixon team right now, he spearheaded this intelligence operation and allowed the monitoring of the anti-war movement. And he gave G. Gordon Liddy $100,000 to keep tabs, he said, on anti-war demonstrations. He also hired, this came out in the testimony from Herb Porter, that Magruder told him to hire 10 college informants to masquerade as activists in the Youth International Party, that's the Yippies, and the Democratic Students for Democratic Society and other radical groups. They were to get $500 a month for pretending that they were members of the Youth International Party, or the SDS, and then they got $500 a month for their expense accounts, which came around $10,000 for that group. Well, Donald Segretti, one of the men who was not brought into the trial of the Watergate, but you'll hear more about him as every week rolls on, said that he was one of 50 agents, and he's a lawyer, member of Army Intelligence, Judge Advocate's Office, who went around the country, and he would go to a lawyer in Tennessee and hire, ask him to pay five other lawyers. Segretti was working with Richard Nixon's attorney and Dwight Chapin, the appointment secretary in the White House. But Herb Porter was giving the college students money to act as demonstrators and masquerade as activists. This whole White House team will come out to be, as time goes on, a separate splinter of the entire Republican Party. It is an espionage group that is separated totally from the Republican Party, and I feel they're working very hard for the day when they'll have Ronald Reagan and Rockefeller and Connally and Agnew as the last. They'll be the stronghold for what they believe are patriotic services that do not represent the democracy that we once thought we had, but which is going away pretty fast. A lot of this information about the San Diego chief was from the Washington Post this last week, and Mr. Fish from the National Committee, Republican National Committee, objecting to all the testimony at the trial, none of it was true, that these men didn't work with security. Miami officials didn't know them. The San Diego officials didn't know them. They're known by what they had in their car, the weapons they had on their person, Mr. Liddy carrying a gun, Howard Hunt's gun, the walkie-talkies, the car full, the rented car, the Chrysler full of weapons. They were involved into demonstrations and violence of some kind, and they're splintered from the party. Now, was Richard Nixon's life involved in Miami? Was he going to be killed? There's a lot of evidence that the plan was to kill Richard Nixon between the nomination and the election. And the next article that I'm doing for The Realist is going to be on all the evidence, the Taquin allegations, and the evidence that the plans were to kill Richard Nixon in that time period. That doesn't mean that he wouldn't be killed tomorrow or the next day, but the plans at that time, all the evidence that I have, my research, and collecting this information, this massive information, coming in, backs up the Taquin allegations. Now, the San Francisco Chronicle this week on the 14th, February the 14th, has an article about a fight in the White House Secret Service, and that goes to the protection of Richard Nixon. And in gist, this is what the article said, that Richard Nixon was supposed to go up to Rhode Island and be seen in the crowds, and Mr. Haldeman, the White House Chief of Staff, had arranged that when the plane landed, that the ropes would drop, holding the crowd back, and the people would all pour out around the president. They'd rush across, the ropes would be cut, and they'd rush across. Well, I don't have to be the chief of secret service for the White House to tell you that would be very dangerous, because having done a little research on the past political assassinations and the placement of Bremer in the crowd at the time of the Wallace shooting and having him up in Canada where Nixon was speaking was to plant the seed or tell you very plainly, in case you didn't get the idea, and it was printed over and over again, that Nixon could be next. And because Bremer was financed at the Waldorf Astoria by a team of people that have not been disclosed, he had a lot of money for plane trips and rent and car and hotels, travel expenses, and we don't know how much he'll get when he gets out, if he gets out of jail, but he had no trial. Bremer was seen in the company of Richard Nixon, and I have a book on assassinations that just came out this summer, Who Will Be Next? And there's a picture of Richard Nixon and John Kennedy and Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. And everyone accepts the fact that Nixon could be assassinated. Now, it's been told us over and over again that these lone, deranged people, these senseless killers, are lurking out there. Well, the chief of security for the White House, Robert Taylor, he protected Nixon for 4 years. And they were making a trip up to Rhode Island. And Haldeman says, when we get to the airport, you're to relax security, drop the rope, and let everybody run to the president. Now, this was just before the elections. It was after the inauguration, and it was just before the elections, a week or so before. And Robert Taylor in the White House said, I will arrest you. And he threatened to arrest Haldeman, Nixon's White House aide, the chief of staff. The chief of the security in the White House said, I will arrest you if you go against my plans. That I will not do that. I will not drop the rope up in that city or anywhere else. And if you make me do it, I will arrest you. Well, Haldeman did not go through with this threat. They had a lot of altercation, and Taylor would not give in and let the crowds rush towards Richard Nixon. Well, this week, Robert Taylor was fired. And, of course, again, the White House always denies any connection. But leaving with him is Mr. Duncan, too, the second in command of White House security, because he strongly supported the opinion of Mr. Taylor. The two men in charge of security at the White House have been, one was asked to resign and one was fired. A new acting head of White House security, there's Richard Kaiser working there until there's an appointment. Now, in all this, there's no mention of Al Wong. Al Wong was the chief of security in the White House. He was the one who hired James McCord of the espionage team that was to go down to Miami. McCord was in charge of Richard Nixon in Miami, and he was chief of security for the committee to reelect Richard Nixon. Caught, arrested with the provocateurs and with the men who bring in the provocateurs, his whole group of CIA from the Bay of Pig days, Mr. Wong is not mentioned in this Secret Service shuffle. Whether he stays on at the White House where he quietly slips away, he was called by the grand jury for testimony on how he hired James McCord. See, there's a clique there of James McCord and Charles Colson and Howard Hunt, very far right-wing group, and Wong was one of them. He isn't mentioned here. If he stays on at the White House working for the security of Richard Nixon, part of that espionage squad is still there. And This reminds me of the John Kennedy assassination. They demoted Robert Taylor, and they told him he could now be in charge of foreign dignitaries. His new job at Secret Service would be foreign dignitaries. At the time that John Kennedy was killed, Mr. Lawson of the Secret Service was called in, and they said, did you have any men on the building in Dallas in front of the Dealey Plaza? And they said, no. I said, did you have anyone at the window? He said, no. Did you have Secret Service out in the grass when he went around the corner and the curves, the car slowed down? No, we didn't do that. So they said, well, what would you do if a foreign dignitary, a head of state of another country, were there? Would you have men at the window? And he said, yes. Would you have men on the roofs? Yes. Would you have men on the grassy knoll? Yes. So the proper place, I guess, for Robert Taylor now is to work with a foreign dignitary, because they get more protection than the President of the United States. When it's time for the President of the United States to go, evidently he goes. So Mr. Taylor has been moved. But this is one more indication of Haldeman working. He worked in Magruder with his tight clique, the Squad 19. He worked with this tight group. And so this week it was revealed that the man that he had the argument with is fired, and Haldeman remains in charge of the president's life. There was, when we talk about violence, I want to bring up a subject that seems far removed from the John Kennedy assassination. And you can call in if you want and ask any questions about the Watergate. I'll take some calls. But I'm concerned about the American national emergency. There was an article in the paper this week, and I received in my mail a book called The Community Emergency Plan. Now, James McCord was arrested at the Watergate, was in charge of a 16-man emergency contingency unit that would take care of the radio control, the news media, the mail that would be opened, and round up radicals. And in the event of an emergency, which we would have had if the president had been killed or if there was martial law at one of the conventions, James McCord was ahead of this group. And it was revealed by Congressman Moorhead not long ago, the intention to have a radio in every home, on every boat and car, a two-way radio into your television or into your radio. The government can speak to you, and it can also hear what's happening in your home. And as we get closer towards this fascist state, if this team does take over at any time in a state of emergency, they have the two-way radio to tell you what to do. And I watch the news. I watch every accident, every murder, every massacre or plane crash to see how much of this is caused by provocateurs now as an excuse for a state of emergency later. And there was an accident in Alameda just last week, a plane crash, where the Navy pilot smashed down into an apartment house and killed 8 people. And this happened in Chicago not long ago, December the 8th, when the wife of defendant Howard Hunt was on an airplane that smashed down, killing 45 people. Well, the article in the San Jose Mercury this week on the 14th said the jet crash pilot got death calls. He got death warnings, evidently, and it implied that somebody was calling him and that they were anti-war people. So the scene is set. That pilot died. Those young people, the hippies, the anti-war people, could have done it to him. And you see, this is the same propaganda you get by provocateurs who don't have the evidence but plant a seed, just like at the time of the fires down at Big Sur this summer. They say there were hippies down there. They didn't say who caused the fire. There could have been straight people, but the implication is those people. So they said the plane crash this week, it said the jet crash pilot, he had gotten death calls, nuisance calls, anti-war people. The next article, that followed, said, was the pilot dead when the plane hit? Then it was the suggestion that the pilot was dead or unconscious when that plane went down. Well, it turned out in Chicago that pilot, they had no radio communication for 20 minutes before the plane crashed into that roof, and that the pilot had cyanide inside his blood system. And the question was this pilot tampered with, like the pilot in Chicago? Then another article followed this the next day, and it said he dreamed of a disaster. And you have the story of a hospital up at Alameda where this man dreams that this disaster is going to come. First you have the pilot with the warning he's going to be killed, and of course it's anti-war people. Then you have an article that the pilot wasn't alive when the plane went down, which couldn't, it'd have to be from a military kind of situation. There's no anti-war hippies at that Navy air base fixing those planes, I'm sure. Then another article says the administration of Alameda Hospital, the administrator dreamed that a jet would hit his island. His premonition had him prepared. I'm reading this from the San Francisco Chronicle this week. With an elaborate disaster drill plan, his staff was prepared. Almost the same time that a Navy jet smashed into the apartment last week, it was five blocks away. He said, we could have handled 100 injured people, maybe more. We had six medical teams within minutes. Within minutes of the accident, six surgical teams were scrubbed, ready to go. The staff was marvelous. Everything was smooth. He said, it was incredible. The doctor said the phones broke down almost immediately, but everyone showed up anyway and went straight to their stations. Well, when I read these articles, I get visions of the communications breaking down when Greece was overthrown, when martial law was taken into effect there. And in case people have not heard the show before, think I'm super paranoid, I think of Roy Ash and Lytton Industries that was the conduit of funds to overthrow Greece, one of them. And he's sitting right up there with the Office of Budget Management, right in the White House, Richard Nixon. Why isn't martial law possible? And are we being tested upon? And will the scapegoat, like in Nazi Germany with the Reichstag fire, always be the hippie, the student, the nonviolent, the anti-war? And I think of the teams that are in work in the White House, like the people that helped overthrow Greece or put martial law into the Philippines or South Korea. And then I think of that airplane crash and the similarities to the Chicago crash. And then the wonderful emergency team without communications that had everything scrubbed and ready, five blocks away, 100 injured came in, and they, within minutes, all ready to go. And it reminds me of a piece of literature that I received in my mail this week, and you'll get one too. And it's put out by the State of California Office of Emergency Services, which is not much different than that Office of Emergency Planning in Washington, D.C., and the State of California was mentioned by James McCord as being part, well, I'm sure all 50 states are part of this planned police state. I got a book this week. As I say, you'll get one. It's called This Is Your Community Emergency Plan: Fire, Flood, Air Pollution, and Nuclear Attack. Now, save this plan. It says it may save your life. I read the little newspaper. I have it here, and it's got 10 pages. It's got 10 pages. And it mentions, I read it, and what is the gist of it? It talks about earthquakes, and it mentions them six times. Natural disasters, turn on your local radio station. The emergency broadcast will take care of you. It talks about earthquakes six times. You turn the page and there's a section on floods and fires. That's another page. Air pollution, they mention five times. And in the case of extreme emergency, the police or the highway patrol, but the police are authorized, close schools, close libraries, prohibit motor vehicles, close amusement and recreational services and facilities. But when you read what Richard Nixon is doing to the ecology and air pollution, you know that there cannot be a real emergency in this, because he's just turned down millions of dollars for controlling air pollution and controlling the sewage. The sources of crisis that they mentioned, the dams that we need for flooding, that's all been turned down, and the money is going, billions of dollars, into military, increased budget in military. So the fireproofing you need for buildings, or the control of floods or new dams, those are not being taken care of. The arms escalation is being taken care of, but they're telling you what to do in an emergency if your dam breaks. But under air pollution, they can cancel amusements, recreation, schools. The police will call you. Then they come to the next page. The first five are community plans, natural disasters, and so forth. Then they come to the really heavy part. Page 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 is nothing but fallout shelters, nuclear attack, emergency families, what to do in case of emergencies. They mention nuclear attack 32 times. You open your front page and they want Richard Nixon to get the Nobel Prize for Peace. But if you get your mail this week, you're going to read 32 times about nuclear attack in a five-page story. The fallout shelter, what to do if you are attacked, 85 times. They refer to the fallout shelter if attacked, 85 times on five pages. They talk about survival 4 times, radiation 6 times. What your family should do in case of emergency, 29 times this is mentioned, your emergency. The whole effect is really a scare tactic. You turn on your radio. Everyone's to get a radio. You'll hear your emergency broadcast station. They mentioned your radio 15 times, your emergency broadcast station. Remember that it's going to be a two-way radio. What you say in your home is picked up by them. But this has to be justified because they're going to protect you. You see, you're going to be very protected against nuclear attack. The chances of nuclear attack are so small, but the chance of listening into what people are saying in their homes is really great. And this is a scary little sheet because it's what it tells me is don't put it down and say nuclear attack is impossible, because there will be planes dropping. There will be provocations. There's got to be what they call their emergency broadcasting station. If there are not enough communists in Germany, Adolf Hitler chose to say the Reichstag fire was caused by them. He could create a situation and kill everybody involved in setting the building on fire. If there is not enough violence or martial law, if there are not enough radicals protesting, if there's not enough people on the streets rioting or going on strike, a national emergency will be created, and then they will use that radio plan and pull in what you're saying. There is no intention to use the funds to clear the pollution or to make the dam safe or to make things fireproof. This is all the government is going to take care of you. Now, they talk over and over the pages on emergency broadcasting, survival supplies, public shelter, home shelter, public shelter. I'm just opening one page here. If a national emergency is declared, this is just one page, what to do? Listen to your radio, TV, review your family emergency, go to your public shelter, get a private shelter, think out your emergency plan. During a period of national peril, a national emergency could last for hours if your attack occurs. I'm just reading one page. If the attack warning is sounded, the attack warning and signal, they've got a wavy thing or a straight. One single signal will be used for attack warning. The attack warning signal will be 3 to 5 minutes. When the signal is sounded, it means the attack is imminent. All clear. Turn your emergency broadcasting system. If a nuclear attack occurs without warning, there'll be a brilliant flash or a shock. A brilliant flash or shock will be your only warning of a nuclear attack. What to do? Turn on your local emergency broadcasting system. This is all one page. It's just like a primer. When the attack warning signal is sounded, the nationwide emergency broadcast system will go into effect. TV and FM radio stations will stop broadcasting. They stopped broadcasting in Greece. That's how Greece was overthrown. Read Death of Democracy by Stephen Rousseau. The people that were in charge of overthrowing that government had their own walkie-talkies, like Mr. McCord, Mr. Hunt at the Watergate. The others had no communication. You turn into a page, it's all about shelters, but it's over attack, emergency, be careful. Turn on your broadcasting. See, the war is over. We've got this great Nobel Prize winner who wants a prize for making peace with China, making peace with Russia. But you're going to get your broadcasting system. You're going to get your police state. Unless you do something about it, you could write to Congress. One of the things I think you should do, Senator Irvin's going to investigate the Watergate. story. Tell him his investigation's a whitewash, too, because he announced this week that he didn't plan to investigate the practice and procedure of the government agencies that probed the Watergate. How can you investigate the Watergate if you depend upon the agencies that probed it? If Robert Mardian or John Mitchell or Patrick Gray III have been working with the espionage teams, the espionage funds, were with the men out in California after the original arrest, knew that the evidence was being destroyed in the offices that they had, if it was all their team working with Richard Nixon, how in the world can they investigate it? So if the Congressional Committee doesn't investigate the government agencies that probed it, that turned in a trial and didn't have a prosecution case even going that the judge that was discussing, tell Irvin that you don't want that and you want something better and just keep going. I'll take one call here on this line. I think this line's open up. Yeah.
I just want to make a comment to you. You were talking about possibility of civil things. We live near the airport in Salinas, and I have noticed that a very large Air Force plane flies over numerous times, makes mock landings, doesn't actually land. And then at night at this airport, there's a military helicopter that comes in and makes landings on the civilian airport over here in Salinas. And I'm just wondering their motives and why they do this.
Well, why don't you call the airport and ask? You see, all of these things are a danger to us. We are told they're for our safety, but the more that goes on, we should get rid of all that. Like the assassination squads are always the tax squads, the special forces brought in case of emergency. I think we should demand an explanation of what they think an emergency is and have a definition and find out just how many things they're getting ready to take control of.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's, you know, they have, why don't they land over at Fort Ord over here? Why are they using this small airfield over here, and it's a civilian airfield anyway?
Well, why don't you call and ask and let them know that you resent it, that you're not stupid, and that there's military at the base, and we know they're there, but they're in every civilian airport, too. They've taken over our airports.
Yeah. Okay, just wanted to make that comment.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Yeah, I think that as you become aware of the infringement of your rights at every airport and everywhere you go, the degree of searching and seizure and going through suitcases and clothing is not the major problem in hijacking, but now they have access to who's traveling and where they're going, and that is a big problem, the infringement of our rights and this kind of emergency. You see, when Tackwood said they were going to create martial law and have a police state, and when the men were arrested at the Watergate, who he mentioned the same names that he had, the code names of Mr. Martin was James McCord, and when they're continuing these emergency plans and putting out this brochure, I think people who receive this brochure in the mail should look at it and write to Sacramento and say, we resent it. We can handle our earthquakes. I lived in California all of my life. I'm a fifth generation, my children, fifth generation Californians, and the earthquakes really aren't that bad. We don't have that many to put all this fear. And nuclear attack, I think all of us would rather have no emergency radio station and handle our own floods and fires than to have a two-way where they listen into our homes. And before it gets too out of hand, this all should be canceled. They're putting all these wires in and planning, and I don't know if it's beyond the chance of stopping it now, unless you have a real rebellion or civil war and refuse to put that kind of stuff into your home, just like Senator Harkey refuses to be examined at the airport. He's making a stand, I won't be searched, and I'm not going to go through with that. You have to make up your mind what kind of a world you want to have, and then you have to question them. And when you get this emergency thing, just say, the war is over now, and you're giving me 5 pages of excuse for putting in a radio control system that you've planned for 2 years on the basis that you're saving me from nuclear attack. I think it's ridiculous. We're not going to have a nuclear attack in this country, and I think the chances of having a police state are about 100 times greater than a nuclear attack. Next week, I didn't have time. Time's running out, and I only have 2 minutes. I'm going to talk about a letter I got from an Israeli officer over at the Navy Postgraduate School who's doing a survey on the attitude of Jews in the community to their feelings towards Israel as a Jewish country. And one of the questions asked, yes, you say whether you agree with these questions slightly or disagree. And one of the questions was, having my own personal problems and goals, I prefer to deal with them rather than make up my mind about such remote issues as Israel. You see, again, the Green Berets, the Friends of the Middle East, the squads are getting ready to come down with some heavy guerrilla work in the Middle East. I've heard reports of it. So they want the attitude of the Jewish people to think, well, Vietnam's too far for me, Israel's too far for me, I have my own problems, and I can't make up my mind about those issues. Then they can feel justified, well, if the Jews at home don't care, we can go ahead. They send out a questionnaire, which I feel is a very suspicious kind of a questionnaire, and I'm going to read the questions next week, because I think the decision is made of what to do with Israel when they sent Richard Helms over to Iran and with John Conley traveling in our Middle East. The decision has been made what to do with Israel, but they want the minds of the Jews to rationalize so as the cover story comes down, they can justify the news to fit the minds of particular people. We'll do more about that next week, because that is part of Dialogue Conspiracy. It all ties together. So until next week, if you have any questions, write the station, and I'll try to answer them on the program. If there's anything you want to know about any one particular assassination or conspiracy, and I'll try to answer it.
Okay, thank you very much, May. May will be back again with us next Thursday at 5:15. You're listening to KLRB FM in Carmel.
If the kids are watching the Brady Bunch and you are missing Mission Impossible because you don't have an extra TV, then here's a solution. When you